Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the New York Times, the News and Observer, The Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Classic FM. Music Review is underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning appointment, please call 919-779-1755. This program is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical, folk, jazz, country, rock, and pop music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. Today's musical trivia questions come to us from the website onthisday.com. Question number one. The Music Hall, later known as Carnegie Hall, today celebrates the anniversary of its grand opening with its first public performance. Who was the first performer at that grand opening? Was it A, Peter Ilyich Tchaikovsky? Was it B, Louis Armstrong? Was it C, Leonard Bernstein? Or was it D, Glenn Miller? First performer at the opening of what became known as Carnegie Hall. Who was that, anyway? And question number two, the first practical phonograph, the gramophone, was patented on this very day in which year? Was that A, 1886? Was it B, 1900? C, 1911? Or D, 1922? The gramophone patented? Which year was that, anyway? The answers to these two important trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. Our transitions come to us from that same website, onthisday.com, and today, quote-unquote, is the weekend of May the 3rd. Well, it was on this day, back in 1986, that Cleveland, Ohio, was announced as the city where the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame would be built. 1986, today. And it was 60 years ago today, 1964, that the Moody Blues formed in Birmingham, England. They were known for blending many of their rock classics with symphony orchestral arrangements. The last remaining original member of that band, keyboardist Mike Pinder, died just a week ago. The band was formed 60 years ago today, 1964. And in classical music news, we have this article titled, 10 Female Composers Whose Music You Need to Hear. The following composers have been chosen for their resilient artistry, encapsulating the strength of all women. This is published in gramophone.co.uk, June 20th, 2022, by Eleanor Pugsley. And the first listed is Clara Schumann. I once believed that I had creative talent, but I have given up this idea. A woman must not wish to compose. There never was one able to do it, Clara remarked in later life. Am I to be the one? It would be arrogant to believe that. Despite her lack of self-belief and a turbulent private life, Clara Schumann's musical career withheld for an impressive 61 years. Admired by her colleagues, her compositions caught the eye of Brahms, Mendelssohn, Chopin, and her husband, Robert Schumann. Over time, Clara has become routinely remembered as, quote-unquote, the wife of Robert Schumann and the subject of some speculative gossip with Brahms, to the detriment of her own achievements. Now, a century later, her compositions are gaining the recognition they deserve. Her most notable works include her piano trio in G minor. And at number two, Louise Farrenc. The subject of equal pay is an issue that appeared well before the 1970s. In the 19th century, French pianist and composer Louise Farrenc was appointed professor at the Paris Conservatoire. At first, Farrenc was paid less than her male colleagues. After persistent protests, Farrenc finally achieved equal pay, setting an inspiring example for women around the globe. Farrenc had a large portfolio of compositions, symphonies, overtures, and solo piano works. Written in 1949, Farrenc's Third Symphony has been described as a rebellion, a defiance against the 19th century belief that women were only able to compose small-scale works for domestic setting. Number three, Ethel Smyth, 1858 to 1944. Suffragette Ethel Smyth wrote The March of the Women in 1910, an anthem for the suffragette movement. The call to battle has served women around the globe. During Smyth's lifetime, March of the Women was performed in multiple venues around the UK, including the Royal Albert Hall. Perhaps most notably, the march was performed at Holloway Prison, where, in 1912, conductor Thomas Beecham found a number of imprisoned suffragettes, led by Smyth herself, marching round the courtyard and singing lustily their war chant while the composer, beaming approbation from an overlooking upper window, loudly beat time with a toothbrush. Number four, Grazenia Bachewitz. That's 1909 to 1969. Grazenia Bachewitz played a vital role in transporting Polish music from the 19th century to the 20th century. Bachewitz merged native folk songs of Poland with a modern style, creating an inspiring approach to music. Composing during a period of war and socialist regimes, Bachewitz's compositions are a tribute to her strength and resilience as a female musician. Number five, Augusta Holmes, 1847 to 1903. Despite active discouragement from her mother, Augusta Mary Ann Holmes adamantly pursued her right to become a musician. The French-Irish composer waited until after her mother's death to begin her music education. By 1875, Holmes was a well-respected composer in the cultural circles of Paris, winning the admiration of Franz Liszt. From choral works to operas, the energetic works of Holmes challenged the dominating works of her male counterparts. Number six, Ellen Taieff Zwillich, born in 1939. Zwillich is the first woman to have been awarded a Pulitzer Prize for her work. She's the first woman to receive a doctorate from the Juilliard School and the first to hold the composer's chair at Carnegie Hall. Zwillich's compositions range from large-scale symphonies to solo works. Then there's Germaine Taillefer, 1892-1983. The turn of the 20th century was a pivotal time in the world of art. Art was evolving and new voices were emerging. Amongst them were the 20th century masters, Debussy, Stravinsky, and Ravel. Writing most of her celebrated works during the 1920s, Taillefer became a figure of exceptional musical talent and prowess. Number eight, Erolyn Wallen, born in 1958. Errolene Wallen's engaging compositions have been heard across the globe and commissioned by the most prominent institutions, including the BBC and the Royal Opera House. From chamber works to songs for voice, her compositions are versatile and have an authentic approach to music. Her work appears along Bjork, Sting, Elvis Costello, and Meredith Monk on the Brodsky Quartet's album Mood Swings. In 2007, Errolene was awarded an MBE for her services to music and a CBE in 2020. Number 9, Rebecca Clark, 1886 to 1979. Quote, unquote, "I was his only girl pupil, and it was considered something rather unusual," said composer Rebecca Clark. Born in 1886, British American Clark achieved what she called her, quote, unquote, "one little whiff of success" with her Viola Sonata of 1919. Her composition spans a range of 20th century styles and is renowned for its passion and prowess. Last but not least, number 10, Amy Beach, 1867 to 1944. The 19th century attitudes towards the education of women saw female musicians such as Amy Beach unable to receive the same opportunities as her male counterparts. Despite this, Beach became the first woman in America to have her symphony published and performed. The Gaelic Symphony premiered in 1896 by the Boston Symphony Orchestra. The symphony draws on songs from the British Isles, the home of Beach's ancestors. In doing so, Beach became the first composer in America to use folk songs as thematic material within a symphony. Louis Armstrong, Hesitating Blues, introduces our jazz and blues music news. This is published in Smithsonian Magazine, June 2023. Institutional Knowledge by Lonnie G. Bunch III. Treasures in Trouble. A renowned blues archive uncovers a rich musical history and poses questions about a historian's responsibility to his subjects. Often curating an exhibition is about getting out of the way of the story and allowing the collections to speak for themselves. That is not the case for Treasure in Trouble. Looking inside a legendary blues archive. A new show at the National Museum of American History about the folklorist Robert Mack McCormick and his expansive archive on blues artists in Texas and the Deep South from the early 1900s through the 1970s. McCormick began collecting material in the 1950s and continued until his death in 2015. His archive, covering hundreds of artists, is among the world's largest and most significant collections of the blues and other vernacular musical traditions. The exhibition, however, is as much about the process of curation and collection for the Smithsonian's curators and certainly for McCormick himself as it is about the material. The exhibition space doubles as the entryway to the Archive Center, which houses McCormick's collection of more than 590 reels of sound recordings and 165 boxes of material totaling over 70 cubic feet of manuscripts, interviews, research notes, and more. The collection will be open to the public and available online. The left side of the entryway features a selection of the archival treasures promised in the show's title. Playbills, photographs, and recording contracts, stacks of interview tapes, a 1920s guitar played by Sam Lightning Hopkins and Mance Lipscomb. Upon entering, visitors hear a looped recording of music interspersed with intimate interviews of artists. On the right side is a titular treble, falsified documents McCormick created to discredit his collaborators and letters from musicians' family members asking him to return photographs they had lent him. In addition, a panel explains the Smithsonian's current ethical returns policy, which supports the museum's ongoing work to return such photographs to the descendants of their original owners. McCormick, who is white, worked primarily with black artists, and his documentary labors spanned the Jim Crow era and the Civil Rights Movement. While he gained the trust of interview subjects, chronicling their experiences with racism in the segregated South, some of the relationships he forged were paternalistic, and indeed he violated the trust of some of the subjects. McCormick referred to his archive as, quote-unquote, the monster. It overtook his house, his family, and his life. As we explore this trove of vital American music, we are obligated to consider it in all its complexity, both the monstrous and the magical. Rock and Pop Music News Introduction, Waiting for a Girl Like You. It's titled, The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame 2024 Inductees Are. This is written by Lisa Respers France, CNN, on the 21st of April, 2024. The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame has announced their 2024 class of inductees. In the performer category, this year's inductees are Foreigner, Mary J. Blige, Cher, Dave Matthews Band, Peter Frampton, Kool & the Gang, Ozzy Osbourne, and A Tribe Called Quest. Jimmy Buffett, MC5, Dionne Warwick, and Norman Whitfield were selected as the recipients for the Musical Excellence Award. The announcement was made Sunday during the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame Night episode on American Idol. The inductees into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame were selected among nominees announced earlier this year and have, quote-unquote, created music whose originality, impact, and influence has changed the course of rock and roll, according to the organization. Nominees this year included Sinead O'Connor, Lenny Kravitz, and Mariah Carey. To be eligible for nomination for induction into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, an individual artist or band must have released its first commercial recording at least 25 years prior to the year of nomination. The 2024 Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction ceremony will happen live on Saturday, October 19th at the Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse in Cleveland, Ohio. The 2024 ceremony will once again stream live on Disney Plus, with a special airing on ABC at a later date and available on Hulu the following day. So, how'd you do on today's trivia questions? Well, the answer to our first question, the Music Hall, later known as Carnegie Hall, celebrates the anniversary of its grand opening today with its first public performance. Who was the first performer at that grand opening? Was that A, Peter Ilyich Tchaikovsky, B, Louis Armstrong, C, Leonard Bernstein, or D, Glenn Miller? And the correct answer is, well, the year was 1891. And that first performer? Peter Ilyich Tchaikovsky. Answer A. As noted in CarnegieHall.org, since it opened in 1891, Carnegie Hall has set the international standard for musical excellence as the aspirational destination for the world's finest artists. From Tchaikovsky, Dvorak, Mahler, and Bartok, to George Gershwin, Billie Holiday, Benny Goodman, Judy Garland, and the Beatles, to honor roll of music-making artists representing the finest of every genre, has filled Carnegie Hall throughout the years. The hall's unique history is rooted in its stunning acoustics, the beauty of its three concert halls, and its location in New York City, where it has played a central role in elevating the city into one of the world's great cultural capitals. Steel magnate Andrew Carnegie was inspired to build Carnegie Hall by his new wife, Louise, who sang with the Oratorio Society of New York. The hall was designed by William Burnett Tuthill, an architect and cellist who had never built a concert hall before. It opened on May the 5th, 1891, with a spectacular concert that featured famed Russian composer Peter Ilyich Tchaikovsky conducting his own music in his American debut. Since then, its walls have echoed with applause not only for the greatest classical, jazz, and popular musicians, but also for the foremost comedians, authors, social crusaders, world figures, and orators of our time. It seems inconceivable now that Carnegie Hall, having fallen into disrepair in the late 1950s, was once slated for demolition. The building was saved only when bought in 1960 by the city of New York after a major campaign led by renowned violinist Isaac Stern and key civic leaders. The hall was soon designated a National Historic Landmark, and after a series of significant building-wide renovations over the last 30 years, has been rejuvenated and transformed into one of the greatest homes for music in the world. And the answer to our second question, the first practical phonograph, the gramophone, was patented on this very day, in which year? Was that A, 1886, B, 1900, C, 1911, or D, 1922? Correct answer? Answer A, 1886. As noted in onthisday.com, it was today in 1886 that Chester Bell and Charles S. Tainter patented the gramophone. As noted in Quora.com, a gramophone and a phonograph are both early devices used for playing back sound recordings, but they differ in their design and operation. The phonograph is the earlier of the two, invented by Thomas Edison in 1877. The key difference between the two is the medium used for recording and playback. The phonograph used cylinders, while the gramophone used flat discs. Both devices played a significant role in the history of recorded music and are important predecessors to modern audio playback technology. Officially, a record player is a synonym for the gramophone, but it's mainly used to refer to modern record players that play vinyl records, vinyl or long playing LP. Records are disc-shaped records made of plastic vinyl that can hold recordings on both sides. A modern record player can only play shellac gramophone records if a special cartridge is used. Even though shellac and vinyl records use the same technique to record and play sound, there are significant differences in groove width and depth that make them incompatible. A gramophone won't be able to play vinyl LP records because of the difference in groove width and depth. As a tribute to the founding of the Moody Blues Band 60 years ago today, and to the recent death of its last member, let's bid adieu with their song, Nights in White Satin.
Nights in white satin, never reaching the end. Letters I've written, never meaning to send. Beauty I'd always missed with these eyes before. Just what the truth is, I can't say anymore,
'cause
I love you.
Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Music Review. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. This program's also available as a podcast after the broadcast in our website, ncreadingservice.org. As we leave you now, remember these words. Kindness is a language which blind people see and deaf people hear. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. If you have a suggestion for music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me at 919-832-5138. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Music Review, underwritten by Bill McClure. Tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning appointment, please call 919-779-1755. So long. Until next time.